Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 106 in this series entitled, Do You Want to Quench Your Thirst? Go Drink Some Water. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the summer of 5760.
Good evening. We're in the middle of the 40th chapter of Tanya Perek Mem. In the previous part of the Perek, the Alter Rebbe explained two concepts in Kabbalah and in Chassidus known as Tzimtzum and Helem. Tzimtzum means contraction. Helem means concealment. Explaining that when we talk about the concealment of the divine energy in the lower worlds versus the higher worlds, when we talk about the evolution from Elyonim to Tachtonim, from higher states of consciousness to lower states of consciousness, from higher levels of reality to lower levels of reality, the evolution consists of two major descents, a Tzimtzum and a Helem. Number one, he said in the earlier in Perek Mem, the higher states of reality receive much greater light, much more energy, much more divine energy than the lower states of reality. The second difference is that the higher states of reality receive this great energy without so many garments and veils that conceal it, that eclipse it. Where the lower levels of reality don't only receive a smaller amount of energy, but it's also much more eclipsed, it's darkened. They don't even see what they are getting. And he says that Olam Hazeh, this world, our physical corporal world, is the lowest in both levels. Both in the level of Tzimtzum, it receives the most contracted level of light, hence giving birth to the concept of physicality. And in addition to that, even the level of light that it does receive is extremely concealed to the point that our whole world is called the world of clippers, the world of shells, because it's a world of cover-ups. Even what it receives is not transparent, is not recognizable. Let's give an example of these two concepts of Tzimtzum and Helem in the intellectual experience of a person. There are people, for example, who are capable of very lofty cognitive and intellectual experiences. Their brains soar high and deep. They develop profound ideas. And then there are other people who are simply incapable of that level of intellectual discourse. And yet often you'll see that there may be a person who can go very, very deep, and his intellectual or her intellectual capabilities are very powerful. And yet, they're not clear. They're not articulate. They're not definitive. There is confusion in their words. The other person may convey much simpler concepts, but what they're conveying is clear, it's definitive, it's explanatory. There was a big gon, his name was Reb Chaim Zimmerman. Reb Chaim Zimmerman was a great mind, a great Talmud Chochem, author of profound Svarim books. He passed away a number of years ago. And Reb Chaim Zimmerman was once telling somebody who told a story to me about a sefer that came out then on Shas, Imnei Mordechai. The sefer was authored by Harav Mordechai Mentlik, Zechernel of Racha, one of the Rosh Yeshivas in Lubavitcher Yeshiva in Timchat Tumimim in New York. And he compared it, Reb Chaim Zimmerman compared it to another sefer that came out at the same time from another Rosh Yeshiva. So he said the difference between the two Svarim is the other Sefer of the other Rosh Yeshiva goes much, much deeper. He develops very fine Svaris and ideas and Chilukim and Pluktas. He says, aber er versteht nicht, was er sagt. You know, he himself doesn't really grasp what he's saying. He said, Imre Mardechai, he doesn't set himself such lofty ambitions. He conveys simpler ideas. But what he says, he really understands. It's really clear as the day in his mind. So you see, this is the difference between Tzimtzum and Helam. Sometimes a person's intellectual capabilities are broad. Sometimes they're contracted, they're smaller, they're narrower. The person is incapable of profounder ideas. But the idea that they are capable of, they really grasp, they really have a handle on it. They can articulate it to themselves, they can articulate it to somebody else, they can really work with it, and you sense that they have it together. And then there is a concept where a person doesn't have tzimtzum, a person has harchava, they have tremendous intellectual capabilities. But it's helam, there's some blurriness. The ideas are not clear. And the same is true in the moral life. You know, some people are capable of profound, idealistic experiences, they have very deep ethical or moral sensibilities. And yet, sometimes on that level, there may not be a tzimtzum, but there may be a helam. The boundaries are blurred. They get stuck sometimes. They themselves are not clear what they really believe in. And sometimes you'll find a person who may live a much simpler life, you know, and their boundaries of morality and ethics are quite narrow. And their sensibilities are not brilliant or tremendously sensitive or profoundly sensitive. It's much more tzimtzum. But they know what they believe in and they know what they don't believe in and their behavior is very solid and consistent. It may not be impressive because it's contracted, it's narrow. But what it is honestly and transparently, no shtick, no cover-ups. Just as it's true intellectually, morally, it's also true spiritually in consciousness. There could be a concept where one world or a person is capable of very profound insights or very profound visions and experiences, but it's blurred, it's blurry, and they can't even do anything with it. They may even be capable of altered states of consciousness, but they can't do anything with it because it's overwhelmingly blurry and disorganized, and it overwhelms them and disorients them. And then on the other hand, there are people who are mitzumtzum. Their spiritual experience is very limited. Its boundaries are not very distant. But what they have is very clear. So when we talk about the higher worlds and the lower worlds, the Alter Rebbe distinguishes between the two on both levels. In the higher states of consciousness, first of all, the dimensions are broader. The vessels are broader. The type of experience they have is much more grandiose and it's much higher levels of reality, of spirituality. Where this world is a world of tzimtzum, a world of tremendous contraction. Not because of a concealment, that's number two. This is just the boundaries of this world. The vessels of this world are capable of a very minute level of spiritual energy. Besides the fact, there's something else, and that's number two. There's not only tzimtzum, there's also helam. If this minute energy would at least be revealed, exposed, that we would feel it, we would know what we have, vod givena halbitzara. The problem is that in Olam Hazeh you also have a tremendous helam, which means the divine energy is completely eclipsed and concealed. It's possible for a person to walk this planet for 80, 90, 100 years and it shouldn't even dawn on him that yesh balabayis lebirizu, that this world has a creator, this world has a design, this world has a purpose, it has a destiny. This is the second element that exists in our world. It's not just there's a tzimtzum, it's also there's a helem, there's a tremendous concealment. Here, the Alter Rebbe conveyed to us in such a beautiful way the accomplishment and the understanding of why we need kavana, why we need to have consciousness, why we need to have meditation and intention, energy, when we learn Torah and when we celebrate mitzvahs. Because when a Jew does a mitzvah, or when a Jew learns Torah, he or she utters words of Torah, thinks, engages in words of Torah, or ideas of Torah, does a physical mitzvah, you put on tefillin, you put on a mezuzah, you give tzedakah. What happened at this moment? What happened at this moment is that we actually became one with Hashem's intimate wisdom and will, which is the pervading theme of Tanya. Hence, we avoid and we eliminate the second disturbing component of this world, which is the Helam component. The Helam component, the concealment which eclipses godliness, that we said goodbye to, because the very concept of Torah and mitzvah is that we are using the world according to its divine blueprint. We are engaging in a physical act, let's say giving tzedakah, putting on tefillin, but this is a physical act which constitutes a mitzvah, which is Hashem's will. So Hashem is being connected with the human being and with this very physical world in the most powerful way. The same is true when we learn Torah. But what we could do is get rid of the Helam dimension, but not the Tzimtzum dimension. The fact that the mitzvah is still a physical mitzvah, being done by a physical person through a physical body with a physical object, that remains notwithstanding the fact that the Helam is not here, but the Tzimtzum is here. And since the Tzimtzum is here, so the Torah and mitzvahs, although they are one with Hashem, and the person becomes one with Hashem, nonetheless, the true depth and richness and divine majesty of the mitzvah can't be revealed because it's still a physical mitzvah. There's a physical box, and there's a physical quarter, and there's a physical check, and this is a physical book with physical pages, a physical mouth and a brain and arms and legs and so forth. So the true, infinite, divine depth and majesty of a mitzvah can't be revealed in our world, not because it's not holy, the mitzvah, not because the world conceals it. This person who's doing Torah and mitzvahs betrayed the concealment of the world. He or she used klipas noiga and pierced through the shell, telling the truth that the essence of the world is godly. I'm now doing a mitzvah with the physical object. I'm doing a mitzvah with my physical arm. I'm piercing through the shells of the world and paying tribute and expressing the truth that Einoid Mulvadai, that the truth of the world is God. But I still cannot liberate myself from the physical dimensions in which the Torah and mitzvahs is playing itself out. In a physical world, through a physical body, through physical limbs and organs. Hence, the Helam piece may be eliminated, but the Tzimtzum piece is still here. And as a result of the Tzimtzum piece, this true depth and spirituality, the experience of what the mitzvah really has to offer, we cannot access. We cannot access it in our consciousness. We cannot access it in this world because we're dealing with gashmis in which the light is so mitzumtzum, it's so contracted, the boundaries simply don't allow for a greater level of light, notwithstanding the fact that I'm doing Torah and mitzvah, so I have everything, but it can't be manifested, it can't be revealed, it can't be expressed. Kavana changes that. When I daven, I say the physical words with kavana. When I learn Torah with kavana lishma, when I do a mitzvah with kavana, that transforms the dynamic. An example, I'll give this example, Rabbi Adin Evin Yisrael brings it in Bir Tanya. It's a wonderful example to understand something of what the Alter Rebbe is saying here. Let's say you draw a home, an image, a picture of a home on a piece of paper. Even if you are a great artist and you draw a perfect image, but if it was on a piece of paper, it's always two-dimensional. The picture, the original picture in its origin may be three-dimensional or maybe more than three-dimensional. But when you're putting it on paper, it is impossible to create something three-dimensional on paper. Not because you're a bad artist. Not because you're doing a lousy job. Not because you don't know what you're doing. But these are the very limitations of when you're imparting this image on a piece of paper. It's going to be two-dimensional. You can create illusions. You can create fantasies so that the person who sees it may think there's three dimensions. But at the end of the day, you cannot go out of those facts, of this essential limitation of the medium you're using. Yet, when you go out of this medium, and you go into a medium in which you can actually play with three-dimensional realities, now you can build a structure of three dimensions, and then you could see in a very real way the difference between something that's flat and doesn't have dimensions and height versus something that's three-dimensional. Now you can actually see it, you can actually experience it. So although we are aware intellectually of the fact that there are other dimensions, they remain theoretical in the world of paper. We must go out of this medium in order to experience them in a real way. This is, I think, a very good metaphor for the concept Alter Rebbe is saying here. The definition of this world is that the amount of dimensions in this world is small. It's very small. Let's say there are only two dimensions, so to speak, relatively speaking, in this spiritual metaphor. So when you have another reality, even one which is multi-layered and multi-dimensional and multi-complex, when it is revealed within these dimensions, it has no way to express its true diversity, its true complexity, and all of its true layers. Yet, when you leave the confines of this world and you enter into another world where the dimensions are greater and larger, suddenly you see new things, new realities, new energies that you didn't see before. You had the same reality, but in one world it's perceived in one way, and in a higher world it's perceived totally in a completely different way. So you can have words of davening. Yihi chvoid Hashem la'olam yismach Hashem b'masav. Atohu Hashem levadecha va'ata mechayes kulam. V'choris imer habris losis eseret saknani. Or Shema Yisrael Hashem alakeinu Hashem echad. Or Ezra saviseinu atohu me'olam. Words that contain atomic levels of holiness. In one world, they can be experienced as empty words which don't have a special ring or resonance or excitement. Certainly don't transform the person saying them. And yet, when these very words are experienced in a higher level, that is more of a keli, that is more of a container, to feel the energy of what's going on, they assume a whole different identity, and in a higher world even more, in a higher world even more, until in the highest place where its full personality can be expressed. And this is what Alter Rebbe is trying to explain to us about the need to elevate the mitzvahs, to elevate the Torah, to elevate the davening from the world of Asiyah to the world of Yetzirah, to the world of Briah, and even to the world of Atzilus. There is a story, I maybe share the story with you, about the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov used to be Mekarev. He was very close to, he loved simple Jews who would say Tehillim and had a simple but deep and sincere feeling for Yiddishkeit and for Hashem. And there was once that his older, senior, more scholarly students were perturbed about the fact that the Baal Shem Tov was paying so much attention to these simple Jews who barely knew how to learn, barely knew how to read. They would sit in shul and say Tehillim all Shabbos. And the story goes that once the Baal Shem Tov was sitting with his students, with his senior students, the Chevrei Kaddishes, holy students, who were great goyim in their own part, and he had them each put their arms around the person sitting near them from both sides. You know, like when the kids sing in camp, you put your hands around each other and you sing together. And the Baal Shem Tov took both of his holy arms and he placed them on the shoulders of the two students sitting near him on the right and the left. So essentially there was one circle interconnected and interlinked together from the Baal Shem Tov all the way around the table of the holy Baal Shem Tov with his holy students. And he asked them to close his eyes and they sang a niggun. And the students described how they suddenly saw these Jews saying Tehillim. But they weren't looking anymore at the physical shul, having the Jews sitting on the broken benches and saying Tehillim. Suddenly they saw these Jews saying Tehillim in Gan Eden, which is Olam HaBriya, Olam HaYitzira. And suddenly they observed the light, the spirituality that was coming out of the bodies and souls and mouths of these Jews saying Tehillim. And they saw the energy they were creating in Gan Eden. So what happened? What did the Baal Shem Tov do? I could stand in a shul and watch a Jew sitting and saying Tehillim, and it doesn't mean anything. It's a physical Jew who looks just like me or anybody else, sitting with a physical book which looks like any other book in the world. Same book, same words, same type of alphabet. And he's saying words. He may be shaking, he may not be shaking. I don't see anything. But if I would just have a different prescription, I would see everything. The same is true in the negative. The Baal Shem Tov once heard one balabas, one Jewish resident of Mezhebuzh, telling another Jew that I'm going to tear you like a fish. I'm going to tear you up like a fish. And the Baal Shem Tov was very disturbed. And he did this practice again with his students. And they were elevated to a different place. And what they saw was that this person actually took his friend and tore him into pieces like a fish. He physically did not do that, but the words created that type of energy that could be experienced in a different world. So if I say something very destructive to another person, I didn't do anything, it was just words. But words are real, words have an energy, but this world, the physical world, does not a container of that energy. The physical world doesn't have the capability to absorb and experience that energy. But if I'm in a different world, if my prescription of glasses, if my vantage point is more fine, more sublime, suddenly I can sense the energy of these words, whether they are destructive or they are constructive. And the same is true with Torah and mitzvahs. You come into a yeshiva, people are learning Torah. You come into a shul and there's a minion of Jews standing with talis and tefillin davening. You may not see anything. Physical garment, physical cloak, a talis, a prayer shawl, physical phylacteries on physical people who are uttering physical words. But in another world, you could look exactly at the same reality. You see what tefillin are. You see what's in a talis. You see what's in the words of davening. You see what's in the words of a blad gemara. It's an earth-shattering experience. This is what kavana does. There are different types of kavana, as explained before. There is kavana, love and awe that accompanies Torah and mitzvahs. That is an intellectual love and awe which comes from the world of Bria. There is a natural Jewish spiritual inspiration which comes from the world of Yetzirah. When I have kavana and I learn Torah or daven with this kavana, or I do a mitzvah with this kavana, so I introduce into this physical act, or into this physical experience, or into these physical words or thoughts, I introduce a dimension of the world of Bria or the world of Yetzirah. I introduce the energy of the higher world, so the kavana infuses, it gives passion, enthusiasm, direction, and animation to these words of Torah or davening or to this action. So what happens is the kavana elevates this dibur or this maisa to the world of Yetzirah, to the world of Bria, and over there the true majesty of these Oisyas HaTorah, or of this tefillah, or of this mitzvah, which is Hashem's will and Hashem's wisdom, could be revealed in a way that's far more infinite than what could be revealed in this world. He said, till Mashiach comes, when the physicality of this world will be elevated, and hence, even the Torah and mitzvahs that were left down here, their true richness will be expressed, because this world, although it will be physical, it will lose the tzimtzum that comes in physicality. And that's the great value of kavana. Kavana takes out it takes the mitzvah out of the world, out of its confinements in the world of Gashmias, and it allows the Jew and it allows reality to experience a much deeper revelation of the true essence of this mitzvah. A deeper revelation comes out into the world, and a deeper revelation is, of course, experienced in the person himself or herself either. Because the mitzvah is elevated to the world of Bria and Yetzirah, and in that world, there is a much deeper revelation of its true energy and identity. And the same is true in the person himself. The impact of the mitzvah impacts this Jew in a far greater way. It refines the person. It inspires the person. So heptufa mensch. A person could daven and finish davening and nothing happened. A person could learn and finish learning and nothing happened besides the intellectual news that they discovered. The new ideas. A person could do a mitzvah, nothing happened. But when there is kavana, vaseis, nothing happened. In the Olam HaBriyah, there's a tremendous spiritual explosion, and this affects the person even down here, because the kavana elevates the mitzvah to the world of Briyah, elevates the person to experience something of what the mitzvah is in the world of Briyah, and hence the person becomes more refined, the person becomes more inspired as well. The person is a more greater keli, a greater vessel to be infused with what a mitzvah has to offer, with what Torah has to offer, with what davening has to offer. Hence kavana is so important. And now let us continue inside, further in Peirik Mem, where according to all of this, the Alter Rebbe explains in a remarkable fashion one title in Kabbalah, how Kabbalah calls emotions. And suddenly, according to this Peirik, we understand so clearly why Kavana, why awe and love have this title, have this name, as we shall see. Holding in the middle of Peirik Mem, Ubazeh Yuvan Heitev, which is on page Dafnun Hey Amid Aleph, page 19, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 lines from the bottom. The narrow lines. Ubazeh yuvan heitev. Zogd Alter Rebbe. Ubazeh yuvan heitev. According to this, we'll understand well. Hadil dechilu rechimu nikroim gatfen derech mashal. Why is it that the chilu, that the experience of awe, of yira, and rechimu, and love, are called wings, gatfen, by way of metaphor? Kedeksiv, as the pasuk says in Yeshaya Perek Vav, ubeshtayim ya'ifev. The pasuk is describing there the seraphim, the great angelic beings, and the wings through which they fly. Ubeshtayim ya'ifev, it will fly with two wings. Obviously, angels don't have physical bodies or physical wings, notwithstanding all of the pictures and the descriptions. But rather, we're talking about a metaphor. That these angels, which represent these wings, which these angels, which represent spiritual realities, have two wings, which are Ava and Yira, the Chilu and Rechimu. Yira and Ava are called wings. As Reb Chaim Vital, the great Kabbalist, the one who is the main student and transcriber of the teachings of the Arizal, writes in his Sefer Shara Yechudim in the 11th chapter, he says that the wings in a human being, the wings in a bird, correspond to the arms of a human being. So what's the connection? Just as the arms of the human being in Kabbalah, we know, it says in Pasach Elio, the introduction to Tikkun Ezoyah, Chesed Droya Yemina, Gvura Droya Smala. Chesed is the right arm, chesed is love and kindness. And gvura, which is strength and discipline and awe, is droya smala, is the left arm. So the arms in the human being correspond to the wings of the bird, hence the wings too. Like in the malachim, the two wings represent chesed and gvura, the rechimu and the chilu, which is ava, love and awe. Ubetikunim pirshu. In Tikkun Ezayar Tikkun Memhei, they explain Sha'ayis Kim B'Teiru Mitzvah B'Dechilu Rechimu. Those who engage themselves in Teiru Mitzvahs with awe and love, Nikroyim Banim, they are called young children. Vim Lavin, if they engage in Teiru Mitzvah without Ava and Yira, Nikroyim Efreichim Dela Yachlin Leparcha, because they can't fly. La Yachlin Leparcha. So somebody who engages in Torah and mitzvahs with awe and love is a bird that has wings and flies. If it's without Ava and Yiru, so there are freichim, chicks or young birds, which are still incapable of soaring their wings. The wings of a freichim, of young birds, of chicks, are not developed sufficiently to be able to fly. So this person may have Torah, may have mitzvahs, but they're lacking the birds. What are the birds? They have the birds, but they're lacking the wings. What are the wings? The wings are the love and the awe that allow them to soar. Why is it that Kabbalah defines the emotions of love and awe as wings. According to the whole explanation in Perek Mem and in the previous chapters, we understand it crystal clear. Wings, as the Alter Rebbe is going to explain, wings don't constitute the very body of the bird or the chick. What wings do is they allow the bird to fly and reach tremendous heights, where if a bird doesn't have wings, or a freyach, a young bird, didn't yet develop its wings, it remains earthbound. It could walk around on the earth. It can maybe even run around a little bit on the earth. But it remains stuck. It remains confined to the earth itself. Like we who don't have wings. The wings take the bird and allow the same bird to go to much greater heights. This explains beautifully why Kabbalah calls the chilu and rechimu gatfin. So at first glance you would think, okay, they're wings, you know, they help you there. They make the Torah mitzvahs higher. But according to the whole explanation, we'll understand it very meticulously. Just as it's clear that the wings of a bird don't constitute the primary element of the bird. They're not even vital organs. The vitality, the life of the bird is totally not dependent upon the wings. The bird can live without the wings. Kiditnan, as it's the Mishnah tells us in Hilchos Treifos, nitlu agapeh hakshera. If her wings were taken, were moved, she's still kosher. The Mishnah in Chulin, Perek Shlishi, the third chapter, Mishnah Dalet says, nishtabru gapeh, the wings of the bird break. It's still a kosher animal. We don't say that it has a fatal disease and therefore it's a treifa animal. But rather, it's a kosher animal. And the same is true, nitlu agapeh. In the Mishnah there it says, nishtabru agapeh. But the same is true, as the Acharonim explain, nitlu agapeh aksheira. If her birds were removed, she's still kosher because it's not fatal. It's not one of the vital limbs. Vahikir, what's the main element of the bird? Who roisha, its head, v'chol gufa, and its actual body. The birds are only serving the head and the body, that it allows them to soar, to fly through the wings. So the wings have a very important function, because through them the head and the whole body can lift itself up and reach heights that it could not reach without the wings. But certainly you're not going to say that because of that the wings constitute the primary essence and vitality of the bird. If they cut off the head of the bird, it can't live. If one of the vital organs or limbs is damaged, it can't continue to live. If its wings are damaged, it won't be able to fly, but it could still live. V'kach derech mashal, this is a metaphor for Torah and mitzvahs too. The